Since Christmas, we've been passing in review all the beginning experiences of Jesus, his biological beginnings at birth, the beginnings of his ministry, his baptism, and there have been various snapshots of the start of his family life. Today's incident is one of those, an important rite of passage for a Jewish male. Had there been photograph albums in those days, his presentation in the temple would surely have had pride of place in the treasured images of his infancy. There is a kind of magic quality to this initiation rite in the temple, as though it is a ceremony of innocence, which is why I love Candlemas with its custom of blessing candles and walking in procession with them. The ritual generates an aura of specialness and of childhood wonder. Apart from the theological significance of the presentation of Jesus in the temple, this is one of the last pieces of information we will get about the early years of Jesus. The only other incident that will be told about is his version of being a difficult teenager, in which he frightens the life out of his parents by staying back in the temple for a theological disputation. These two scenes from family life are all we will have to go on as he disappears from our view for a couple of decades before eventually re-emerging as a fully formed adult at the age of 30, ready to begin his ministry. Many biographies these days put me off because they drown the reader in information. It's as though the author can't bear to waste any of the facts that they've dug up through their patient research, and so they put everything down on paper in books that get longer and longer and thicker and thicker. Yet the more they do this, the more the subject recedes from view. Good biography writing is about the art of seeing the pattern of a person's life. It's about discerning the shape of someone's personality, and as much of the hidden hinterland of the self as it is possible to glimpse, and then selecting the incidents and the information that illustrate this and flesh it out. It's not necessary to tell it all, but rather it's about reaching through into the very core of the subject's identity with just enough of the story to let our intuition and intelligence do the rest. The gospel writers take this less is more approach to the nth degree and leave it to us to do all the work as we try to imagine what those years from 13 to 30 were like. These are the hidden years of his life, the tunnel period, in which he is discreetly out of our sight. Speculation has abounded over the years as to what he was up to in this preparation phase of his life, but that is all it is, speculation not grounded in any reliable information. New Testament theology over the past 100 years or so has done us a great service by pointing to the reality that Jesus must have gone through a process of growth, development, and maturation to become the outstanding spiritual leader that he was. Previous ages tended to see him as someone who arrives in the gospel story fully formed right from the beginning, the combination of divine and human natures, delivering him to us a completely realized identity from the moment he first drew breath. What psychology and the behavioral sciences has made us aware of is that if he was indeed fully human, that he would have developed the way we do, by trying things out, through a process of trial and error, by making choices through which he encountered the world as an arena of rewarding and discouraging experiences. Who we are now is largely a result of the influence of our parents, of the people we fell into the hands of as young and impressionable adults, and the impact of the successes and failures of our endeavours in our early years. The narrative, the story of our early years, is the determining factor of the cards we hold in our hand to be played in later life. What was happening to Jesus in those hidden years is that he was building his character, his identity, brick by brick, out of the day-by-day decisions he made as to his role, the mission he would be engaged in with in his later life. There's a phrase of some ardent Christians use to describe the touchstone of their decision-making process, WWJD, what would Jesus do? I don't think it's terribly helpful, because he is a very different to us, and he asks us to be our unique, fully realized selves in our style of being a Christian, not some second-rate carbon copy of him. But the phrase might usefully lead us inside his way of thinking about reality in the formation period of his life. Central to his inscape would have been a sense of intimate connection with the reality his religious tradition called God. This would have gone hand in hand with an intuitive awareness, fostered by much scriptural reflection, no doubt, that he was destined for a special role that drew on and amplified Israel's traditions of prophets and of the frustrated expectations of what Israel's shepherd kings were supposed to have achieved. With these two priorities shaping and forming his way of looking at the world, he would have approached the day-by-day decisions of those hidden years at Nazareth from the point of view of what would equip him and develop him as God's special person. What choice in this concrete situation will most clearly reveal me to be the agent of God's purposes for the people I have grown up in the midst of? Each decision, each choice, built on the shoulders of the ones made the day before, so that he matured and developed into the role of a lifetime that began with the call to repentance we heard about at the start of Mark's Gospel last Sunday. I've been talking about the choices involved in the character formation process of Jesus as a young adult. Most of us here this morning are at a later stage of our life cycle. We have become more or less what our choices and decisions have now declared us to be. Our self-definition should now be apparent. There is a different challenge before us now in the years of our maturity. Fowler, in his writing about the stages of faith that we pass through from childhood to old age, declares that the last stage of our life presents us with a choice between despair and hope. Looking back on our personal narrative, with all its ups and downs, considering our present circumstances in all its limitations and satisfactions, contemplating what comes next after our death, what emotions and thoughts and reactions spring to mind? The kind of view we will take of our personal story and what it meant will depend to a large extent on the foundations we have laid at earlier stages of our life. To what extent did we build our life on the baselines of faith, hope and love? There may have been not a few tragedies and failures in what came to us over the years. We may be contending with the kind of loss of control agendas that poor health and ageing brings with it. But a robust sense of hope takes all these off-putting agendas and reinterprets them as grist to its mill as it builds a sense of Christian destiny located within the life, death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Our life story is reframed within his life story. Our death followed by life is relocated within his death followed by life story. We can come to see that even in the heartbreak stories of our life, the God of love was at work like a master weaver, taking our mistakes and our failures of loving and working them into his beautiful tapestry that will be the human story in its completeness. Yes, we have choices to make, even now, that will determine whether our life story was a tale of despair or hope.